The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is K. Quincy Parker.
And I am Matthew B. Kelly. Yeah.
And today, we are delighted to have you join us once again for this podcast. We are also exploring the wonderful world of single malt scotches. Occasionally, we'll stray from single malt scotches and we'll do bourbons and we'll do blended scotches. We've even had tequila. We've done tequila. A friend of mine who's a wine expert, I might bring her on to have a conversation about wine.
Expedite this. Yes.
I will bring her on to talk about wine very soon then. But the whole point of the show is to have a good conversation while we explore a good scotch or a good drink and spend some time together just being interested in the life that we are currently living. It's sometimes easy to get distracted by the past, and it's even easier to get distracted by the future, right? You know, the past can weigh you down and create this sense of almost, it's the guilt, right? It's the regret. It's the thinking about what you could have done differently that sometimes can trap you in repeating cycles. And then when it comes to the future, it's the endless imaginings of infinite possibilities that can paralyze you, that just the plethora and profusion of choices can keep you from making a choice because you have choice paralysis, right? So the only moments that we, and this is such a cliche, it is.
I acknowledge that it is a cliche.
I acknowledge the cliche of it all. But in this instance, I believe, in every instance, I think a cliche is a cliche because it's true more often than it's not. And in this case, it is, in my view, absolutely true that all we really have is this present moment. And in the Bahamas, at this moment in our national existence, I think that it is imperative that we as a community, we as people, as individuals, as units, whether that's families or communities or neighborhoods or however you define community, we need to truly focus on what is going on in our country right now. And while we think about these things today, I am so excited because I get to share with my partner in crime, my co-traveler along this single malt whiskey path, the Whiskey Exchange's Whiskey of the Year, the 18-year-old Loch Lomond single malt whiskey. If we had an applause track, this is where it would be. Matthew, here is where I would normally tell you the story of the whiskey. But what I want to do this week is just taste it.
Just taste.
And we could talk about the story if you're interested a little later or as the show progresses. But I just really want to get into this whiskey as soon as we can. But is that okay with you?
Sir, do the thing.
I will now do the thing.
On the nose.
So.
That's definitely a scotch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, right? And these are higher end scotches, right? Mm-hmm. I'm always getting a brightness that I can only relate to green apple. Mm. And I was not, you know, it's not like I'm taking a bite out of a green apple there, but the hints there are.
The crispness.
Always unmistakable to me. Mm-hmm. What a slight sweetness, mm-hmm. sour, sweet, crisp.
It's one of those things so far. The vast majority of the scotches that we've tried have been Highland scotches.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're describing is one of the sort of standard features of a Highland single malt. That slight sweetness, maybe a hint of apple. Some people talk a little about pear or stone fruit, or we've had conversations about vanilla even. You know, some of it comes from aging in oak, and the oak imparts a true vanilla flavor. I think there's a chemical compound called a vanillin or something. I will look it up on Google or whatever the case may be.
Okay, this is the first time I'm seeing on the bottle they actually call out the apple.
Yeah.
Caramelized apple and wood smoke.
Indeed. So, yeah, I think you're not wrong to jump in that direction in terms of what it's giving you on the nose. The other thing that I notice on this one is when you consider most single malt scotches are not necessarily that strong in terms of alcohol by volume or proof. You know, this is 46% ABV. So that is, what, 82 proof?
It's not light.
It's not light, but it's not like some of these bourbons or even some of the blended whiskeys that you may get. But you do, for me, you do get on the nose a very clear alcohol forward, you know, this, it is letting you know, hey, this is a stiff drink. even as you are sensing that smoke and that slight fruitiness, the caramelization of the apples or whatever you call it. The color is like a burnished bronze kind of a color in the bottle. In the glass, it's maybe a little lighter, maybe some, you know.
On the palate, I'm going to call that sturdy.
Sturdy.
Yeah, it's, So you definitely get the smokiness.
Mm-hmm.
It exudes a strength, but not overpowering. It stands up. I get the feeling of it, like, being a big dude pouring a drink for you instead of a very chill sort of like.
Oh, no. This is a drink. This is, you're not drinking this lightly. You know, if you want a drink, this is a drink. It does give you that roundness, though. It does give you that, you know, sort of coated in oil type
for
smoothness,
sure.
that you expect.
Slight butterscotch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's not the standout by far. Oh, this is nice, man.
Woo! I'm glad to hear it, my brother. I'm glad you like it. You know what what conversation we're going to have towards the end of the hour.
It's not a conversation. That's just a quick yes or no. And I think in like two more sips we'll know. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know what you're going to say.
But I've already come to my own conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, you know.
Sometime ago.
Yes.
In London.
Yeah, I did. Like, I confess. It is interesting how, as we were talking about, things before we started recording, that we are a podcast that's dedicated to talking about something that has come to be identified with the country that produces it. Mm-hmm. Right? Single malt whiskey is almost exclusively, when you say that, you think about Scotch. You know? And whiskey being an ancient Gaelic term, the water of life, it's from Scotland. It is defined by its very Scottishness. And I feel like, even though Ireland has a whiskey tradition, America has a whiskey tradition, Japan now has a whiskey tradition, there's even whiskey being made in China, in Korea, there's whiskey being made in Latin America, there's whiskey being made all over the place now. But we are still really, as an industry, or as people who follow an industry, we're still really talking about Scotch as Scotch. And I wonder sometimes when we are having our usual conversations about the Bahamas and what it means to be Bahamian and what it means to live in the Bahamas and what it means to embrace your life as a Bahamian in the Bahamas, there's a picture that I have.
Yeah.
Of what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very, I mean, it's kind of fuzzy in some places, but I wonder whether or not we have anything that is synonymous with the Bahamas in the way that Scotch is synonymous with Scotland, in your view.
I mean, so here's the thing, right? If I jump into what you probably know I'm going to say, right? You'll be like, oh, don't give me that type of answer. But you know, things mean different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're talking about, is there one big thing that a lot of people, the majority of people who think about the Bahamas can say? I can say the water.
Mm-hmm. Even people who don't know where we are know that we have beautiful water.
Yeah. I mean, especially now with places like YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out and, you know, you got sailors down there. I saw in passing a video the other day that just said, Exuma has the most beautiful water in the world. That was like the title of their video.
I agree with that, by the way.
So I think that may be the go-to image that people have in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Even a lot of Bahamians. We know that the thing that defines us in a socioeconomic kind of way, the tourism, that they're not coming here for our cultural nuances. I'd say, yeah, most of them. Most of them.
The cultural community is convinced, though, that they are.
Cultural community, having spent some time in that community, is convinced of a lot of things.
Yes.
May or may not be true. Some of them are, some of them aren't.
Is truth.
They are a microcosm of humanity.
Are you talking about relative truth or are you talking about absolute truth?
Both.
Okay. Because, you know, I mean, some of us are delusional, Matthew.
I mean, that is a very common characteristic amongst us creatives.
Yes. Yes, it is. And some of us are so delusional that we believe that. Anyway, I'll leave that there.
Okay, because I wanted to jump in so badly, having grown up in the 80s. Every time you say, we believe, I just want to say, the children are our future.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt, though. You were on a roll there. I agree, internationally and even locally.
Supported by the fact that tourism and whatever, and you know, we're an Instagram nation, at least a particularly large portion of us are.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the images as well. I like pretty things. I like nature, etc. But it doesn't mean that imagery matches the in-person experience of people. Right. And I think you're going to get to this pretty quickly. Right. Which is basically, just because we live on an island doesn't mean that everyone goes to the beach or likes the water even, but certainly has gone fishing at all, much less the last time. And certainly,
this is known as a preemptive strike, but go ahead.
I think the numbers will bear me out that most people have never gone to Cat Island.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but there's a whole song, going to Cat Island. Oh, Cat Island.
I like to join a rake and scrape band. And mm-hmm. I mean, well, okay, I'll make my last point here, right? And I'll let you jump on over the fact that
go down to Bimini.
That I made a preemptive strike, right? Rake and scrape is considered very behavior, right? That's our thing.
Mm-hmm.
We, in most people's minds, what that means is that we created that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that rake and scrape exists many places, right? In the south of the U.S., other islands in the Caribbean region, since we're not technically in the Caribbean region. So my point being that what the idea of Bahamian is, we can never pin this down.
Never is a hard word, Matthew.
Well, here's the reason I feel super good about that. Because although the universe will last a very long time, the Bahamas will not. We're talking geological scale time here. Not this nation is going to fall apart in 50 years. I'm not talking about that.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. So we're never going to pin it down.
See, this is the
thing. In any way that I will accept.
Thank you. Thank you for qualifying the statement. That's all I wanted.
Yeah. It just so happens that I'm right.
I mean,
look,
this is what all delusional people think.
That's true. However, not all people who think this are delusional. That's, you know, let's get the Venn diagram correct here.
Yes.
So,
But many who do are.
I think the broader thing that you wanted to talk about, right, which is informed by some of the things that I mentioned, is what is a Bahamian life? What should be a Bahamian life? So I want to hear right now, mm-hmm. right? This totally unbiased and objective opinion of yours
mm-hmm.
about what a Bahamian life is and should be.
bound to the seat, first of all. I think that it is, if we believe in intelligent design, and I do,
my condolences.
Well, thank you. I do not think it accidental that we are placed geographically where we are. I do not believe that there is no meaning in our placement in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If we are born here, then there must be something here for us. Whether that is something for us to do, or something for us to benefit from, or something for us to use, or whatever the case may be,
mm-hmm.
that is part of what intelligent design would tell me. Because if you are a creator, and you create a thing,
mm-hmm.
and then you populate that thing you created, you're going to put things where you want them to be. Now, stop.
Yeah, I am.
Because having divergent intellectual paths often leads to fun fencing. But I believe that in this instance, I need to get to the end of this before we start fencing.
Oh, I was just breathing. I wasn't going to interrupt you.
Oh, it sounded like you were going to interrupt
me. Yeah. Well, you might have seen the desire on my face.
I did.
But I'm
is
I'm,
this not an interruption?
Well, no, you just... Okay. All right. Yep. Fair enough. Touché, sir. It's a different kind of interruption, but I'll take the hit.
All right. So let me say, I will simplify. I do believe in intelligent design. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a mistake that the Bahamas is where it is and that the people who were born here are born here.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this country, surrounded by these waters, with our geography and our geology, are intended to live a certain way. The way Pastor Miles Monroe used to say it, and I'm going to quote him deliberately in this context, is, if you want to know the purpose of a thing, never ask the thing. If you want to know the purpose of a thing, ask the maker of the thing. And usually, the next phrase out of his mouth would have been, purpose dictates design. Purpose dictates function. The intended use of this country will have dictated the way this country was designed and located. Yes, I know there will be other views, and I welcome them, and I'm happy to interact with them. But I think a Bahamian life, first and foremost, takes account of where we are in the world. We're surrounded by some of the most amazing water that can be found on this planet. We are surrounded by the world's third most fertile fisheries. And the fact that we do not interact with that in what I think is a sufficiently deep manner is, I think, a part of our problem, our national resource problem. I think that what grows here is supposed to generally be what sustains us. But all of that is to say, I think the Bahamian life should be tied to the water and tied to the land as well, whatever that land might look like, wherever you are. Beyond that, I don't think that you can define a life as quote-unquote Bahamian. I think what makes a Bahamian life, is its connection to what is uniquely and intrinsically Bahamian. The broader culture, well, you can't say that because culture evolves, right? So you can say that the Bahamian culture, which constantly is in evolution, may have some commonalities from iteration to iteration. But the only things that don't change Mm-hmm. This is where we are located in the world. We are surrounded by the water we're surrounded by.
Okay, so first of all, our views are largely compatible. The intelligent design thing, we can put that on the side because that underpinning, we come to a lot of the same points of view, I think. And whether the flying spaghetti monster and his noodly appendage has touched the land to make it in a certain way or not is irrelevant to the bigger picture.
Is
the pathway to which you come to those beliefs.
Let me finish. I apologize for interrupting.
And the interruption where I went, ah, was just you saying very unique. Stabbed me a little bit in the heart there.
And my mother, the English teacher, would support that objection. So my apologies.
So, yeah, I think...
Maybe we should clarify that for the people who don't understand why that's a problem.
No.
I agree with you again.
Keep the laughter.
Yes.
So.
Can we?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Like adult.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that licorice is an adult acquired taste,
mm-hmm.
but not that strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's very subtle.
Yeah, and I want to clarify, I don't think this tastes like licorice.
No. I'm not saying that it does. I'm saying like in the way that you can enjoy licorice if you are a person who has eventually come to like, oh, licorice ain't too bad, the subtleties, etc. This is subtle. Anyway, so what it is damn good. Yeah, so here's the thing, right? What you're saying is that most Bahamians are not living a Bahamian life.
Absolutely not.
Sorry, they are absolutely not, or that's absolutely not what you're saying?
No, they are absolutely not living a Bahamian life.
Okay, yeah. So if that is the case, you're advocating for over 300,000 people to start living lives that are more tied to the water and to the land in the way of the land as nature, not as a place to build a triplex.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Clarify that.
I stand by the absolutely as a sentence in itself, as a declarative sentence.
Mm.
The sentence that I cut off was that, and I think I see where you're going, and I welcome...
Well, I wish
whatever is at the end of that sentence. because I don't necessarily disagree if you go where I think you're going.
Well, I don't think that I am going there because the point at which I depart from you is, again, not in a base philosophical foundational way, but in some certain facts about the world that I think you just get wrong. For instance, you declared that this is a very fertile aquaculture. I don't want to use that word because that's more like you where you are growing fish.
Mm-hmm.
Fisheries. Our fisheries are quite fertile.
Yes.
Right? That's my understanding of the biology is that that's not really true. That our ecosystems... marine ecosystems are more like the rainforests, which are super lush on the top, but all those nutrients are recycled in the bottom, not the bottom, the top 2 inches of soil, right? Right on top in that humus, right? If you go down a foot, the quote-unquote soil that is there is devoid of life. So they clear these things down, and they put in ranching,
mm-hmm.
and the soil is just in a couple of years.
But that's
not rich
to me.
It's rich in biodiversity. What I'm saying is, when you say rich to me,
mm-hmm.
it has a deepness and a resilience.
And I think
in fisheries, well, see, this is where we differ because my understanding again is that.
But
such fisheries have few. Yeah, you could think that. we'll let the marine biologists come and tell us, you know, which one is closer to the truth.
Yes. Marine biologists, we need you, because this is a base point of actual disagreement. This is not a...
Well, if it was so rich, then why am I seeing imported conch in super value?
Because...
Hold on.
You could answer it
at the end. I'm not saying you can't answer it. I'm saying, let me make my further points. Why is grouper so rare? Why is crawfish so much rarer, et cetera? We just go on and on with the species, all right? Now,
is this where I can answer?
No. The U.S. and Canada, as an example, have frigged up their cod fisheries in the past, right? But you're talking about orders of magnitude difference between what they're doing and what we're doing. What I'm saying is that those are much richer fisheries because there's physical upwelling, which actually mixes the nutrients in and allows those populations, fewer in terms of the types of fish, the diversity of species, right? But much richer in terms of biomass and the ability to fish that fishery. If we had anything near the scale, not even in total numbers, but on a per capita basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'd be in a far worse state than we are now.
Here's my problem, Matthew. My problem is that
that's number one.
Yes, all right. You are wrong in a fundamental assumption that I think is underpinning this argument. And that is, assumption is the wrong word, that you're missing something. What you're missing is in my view, that this is not a resource argument. This is an economics argument. You're seeing foreign conch in food stores because the food stores can source the conch cheaper from somewhere else. They don't want to pay the Bahamian fishermen to go out and catch the conch and sell the conch in the food store. It's that simple. Grouper is not rare. Groupers are abundant in Bahamian waters. You don't see them because it's cheaper to buy swai. Every fish fingers you get from every Bahamian restaurant, unless it literally says, this is grouper, is selling you swai because swai is cheap. This is not a question of resources. The reason that these things seem to be endangered, and I put that in quotation marks.
Ooh, oh boy! Now we're definitely going to get the biologists calling us. And I so welcome it.
I welcome it too. I welcome it too. It's not because we have a lack of resources. It is because economically, someone has found a way to make more money using somebody else's resources because of economies of scale than they will make if they were to use the local resources.
I will concede that plays a little bit into this, but the real biggest factor, and again, people out there can correct me if I'm wrong, but the dwindling resource,
which
here locally, hold on, makes it scarcer. The demand is not going down, and therefore it makes it economically viable for us to import this stuff because it is rarer here. Every season, except when a hurricane frigs up the fleet, every season that fishermen go out, the catch gets smaller and harder to get. Now, if I'm wrong about that, listen, I choose the hat for me to eat, my brother, because I know firsthand.
I have one.
Yeah, go on. It's fine. I'm confident I'm not going to have to eat this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know firsthand from fishing in the summers with my uncle of the decline.
You literally just finished telling me your Bahamians don't go fishing.
I say plenty, most.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't been fishing in a while. So listen.
Hold on a second. Okay, go ahead. Finish your sentence.
It is clear that our fisheries are being murderized by the amount of overfishing that we're doing.
However,
overfishing being contextual to the particular ecosystems that we are exploiting.
Let me, for the purpose of the next 30 seconds, concede only the last point that you make. I still disagree violently with everything else. However,
you heard it here. He's a violent man.
It's not like anybody doesn't know that about him. Right? Here is my problem.
At 18 year kicking in?
No. I try to decide how much smoke I want. What the hell with it? I want all the smoke.
Be the bad guy.
Yeah, I want all the smoke.
Get him, audience.
So the Bahamas is, if we agree that we arrive at the same place, even though I believe in intelligent design and you don't.
We arrive at roughly the same place,
right? Fair enough. That would include an ideal, quote-unquote, population size.
Oh, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
No, keep going.
Uh-huh. And the fact is, if we are stripping our resources, and that is, if we are using them in a way that is not allowing them to be replenished at a sustainable rate,
mm-hmm.
that is because we are overpopulated.
But the intelligent designer put him there.
No. See, this is why I was worried about smoke. Because the intelligent designer didn't put him there.
They only put you there.
Let me speak unto the unfortunate question of
I think
we get such cut up for this.
No, you can get cut up for this.
That's okay. I'm ready for it.
But I just want to say, right? You know you can get cut up for this. Why don't you consider that maybe there's a good reason you can get cut up for this? And maybe just not go down that path, because this is an indicator that you need to concede.
Concede what?
That you were wrong about this.
How am I wrong? 70,000 in 2010 was the number. 70,000 illegal immigrants. Added to a population of 350-something thousand.
Right.
70,000 is 20% more.
Oh, no. I don't mean that we may be overpopulated, right, as the problem. A
contributing factor.
Yeah.
I think a major contributing factor, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so what are you saying?
I'm saying that you thinking that just solving the population, if you could clip your fingers and everyone who exists in the Bahamas is fine, but not everyone who is here is still here. They're in, let's say, Canada or somewhere else, whatever. Bam, bam, bam. Okay, great.
What I mean, no. The problem is life does not work like that. I cannot clip my fingers,
mm-hmm.
and create a situation where the ideal number of people for our national resources
mm-hmm.
reside on the island.
What I'm telling you, what I tried to get out was that it wouldn't matter. Overfishing would still exist because because we're not just fishing for ourselves. It's an export market.
There is one export market.
Go to Spanish Wells and ask
what
any boat owner.
The number.
Let's start talking about chefs.
The perfect.
How many chefs you get?
You know what? For the purpose of maintaining the familial relationships that I have, I concede this point, Matthew.
You ain't conceding. You just want to pick this up at another time.
Nope. I said what I said. The Bahamas, a Bahamian life should be tied to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Beyond that, I'm willing to be wrong about everything else I've said.
Okay. Well, that said, you're wrong.
Fair enough.
But I want to pick up on something that you said earlier about not being able to include the culture because it evolves. And there may be things that are semi-consistent across iterations, but Bahamian culture evolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that not enough people either realize this or want to concede that it exists, right? That the Bahamian culture of 2024 is not even the Bahamian culture of 2004, much less 74, 54.
But you hear these people, they are lamenting consistently. They're always on the radio or in the newspaper or around the dining room table or at the family gathering or at fish fry or across the water cooler. They're always complaining about how it used to be.
Right. And they are wronger than you.
Because I have conceded one point, Matthew, does not mean that I have conceded everything. Just to be very clear.
No, but I get it. Mm. But yeah, these people, I think they're very reactionary in both uses, the political use and the more literal, I'm just reacting to this sort of way.
I'm going to go one step further than you.
Mm.
I think they're lazy.
I think that's completely compatible with what, mm-hmm. yes.
I think they are lazy. I think they simply want to be able to do what they used to do and for that to have the same impact that it used to have. I have watched some people in the culture evolve with the culture across iterations. And it's interesting. And I'm talking about older, let's call them cultural participants. And I remember the last time I shook hands with one and just had a conversation. This individual was conversant with the current mode of their entertainment stream as a cultural participant. But they had a history going back to the 30s and 40s and 50s. Not personally them in the 30s, obviously, but personally them starting in the 50s and 60s. That they knew late 50s, early 60s, that they were able to trace a line for themselves through different iterations of what stood for Bahamian culture in that particular field. And that individual is juxtaposed against another individual that I know who is constantly angry because in the same cultural milieu, they refuse to accept that doing it the way they did it in the 60s and in the 70s is not going to have the same effect, impact, resonance that it used to have. In fact, if you try to do it that way, not only will you not have the impact you want, you will have an adverse impact because this version of Bahamian culture is this, let's call it Bahamian culture 2024. 1.2.7, whatever we call it, right?
Yeah.
It is actually antagonistic to, or even antithetical to, what might have stood for Bahamian culture in 1956.0.1.7.2. So the refusal to adapt and the refusal to accept that input changes things, right? You can't stay the same if you're constantly getting new input. The only way you can stay the same is if you reject everything new. And if you reject everything new, you die. That is the danger of a static culture, is death.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just, I think that laziness is evil, frankly speaking.
Yeah, okay. So I think manifest in a way that demands that everyone else also be that way. If that has too big a hearing, then yes, I think it can be evil. However, I don't think that the impulse itself is completely without utility. So for a pretty stable but growing and adapting culture, I think you need both the people who want to move forward and the people who want to preserve, right? At different times, you may need different proportions.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, for the people who refuse to take in the fact that this is how things work, well, it's going to be their own personal hell. Right.
Yeah.
Whether they are, all we need is change, or all we need to do is preserve the way things were. There's going to be hell for both those sets of people. But I think you're talking about creatives, because you said participants, but mm-hmm. it seemed like they are participants who are injecting creations into the culture.
And who feel ownership of culture, quote unquote.
Well, yeah, that's an icing problem, mm-hmm. thick icing. But I think the same thing exists with a lot of consumers of that, of culture,
mm-hmm.
where they feel like, it's better in the old days. Why we can't be the way we were, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's just the people who boast. Were creatives and feel that they are owners of that culture.
It's weird how culture can become, in somebody's mind, a thing you can own.
Oh, yeah, by definition,
yeah.
It is shared.
Right.
The culture changes, you know, and some people don't want to acknowledge it, or they want to put up a dam to stop the flood. And from where I am now, it is almost hilarious.
Almost, though.
Yeah.
Almost.
Well you know.
Not quite hilarious.
You know, with a bright scotch,
yeah.
I think it's 100% hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. So the Loch Lomond is working for you then.
Mm. Yeah, man.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent.
Well, I want to thank you, sir.
For what?
This conversation.
Oh, okay. So we have this list. First of all, you're welcome. It was a great, great conversation to have. And thank you for your Matthew-ness about it all. I appreciate that.
I can do nothing but be me.
Yeah, I agree. The list is arbitrary.
I don't think it's arbitrary.
Arbitrary in that we decided initially that everything would be scored out of 5 points. Those 5 points do not have a basis in anything but
our preferences. Okay.
There's not a point for this, a point for that, a point for the next, a point. Mm-hmm. It's just out of five, how do you feel about this thing?
What was your experience?
The only thing that I would ding the Loch Lomond for is the initial instance is a little stringent. Even with the oak softening it up and rounding it out, I don't get that apple flavor that you're talking about, the candy that I felt showed up a little later right away. It takes maybe a little, to me, just a touch too long to develop. But once it develops, it's definitely one of the best sips that I've had in a long time. This is definitively on the list.
So I'm going to jump to the other side and say that the finish, I think, is where I'll dig it. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a bad finish, but it's not as interesting as some other scotches that we've had, both in complexity and just pure, not quite whimsy, but like, oh, here's a particular note that is lingering and is just interesting in its own right. It's a nice, subtle, dare I say, smooth finish. But it's not particularly intriguing. But also definitely on the list.
Wow. Okay. Okay. And
Bonnie banks of Loch Lomond.
Okay. For me, this is a 4.5 out of 5. What about you?
I think that scoring life is just anathema to living a good bohemian existence.
So that's 5 out of 5
for you. No, 4.8 as well.
Okay. Well, you actually scored a little higher than I do.
At least I said 4.8.
No, I said 4.5.
Oh. Yeah.
So you scored a little higher.
Between 5.0.
Loch Lomond, thank you. For a delicious and very useful partner to an interesting conversation. And Matthew, any thoughts? Any last thoughts?
Go forth, listener, and experience the great things about a unique Bahamian existence that Quincy thinks you should have in your life. Because I don't disagree. Yeah. You know, go and see the beaches, the places, experience the water.
If you have not been to Exuma as a Bahamian, you need to go. You need to go to the Exuma Keys Land and Sea Park and float through.
Yes.
You need to go to...
And even go to Georgetown and the five buildings that define a town.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. don't make fun of Georgetown.
I'm not.
My grandfather had his house. The Reverend E.J. Rowe. You need to go to the Tropic of Cancer Beach on Little Exuma. If you have not been...
Or Long Island.
You need to go to Mount Alvernia in Cat Island and climb Mount Alvernia and sit in the chapel at the top and look out over the island. Go to the Pink Sand Beach on the back end of Cat Island, which people don't know about, right? People think Pink Sand is only...
See, look here, man. You're trying to ruin it.
I'm trying to ruin it.
350,000 people who have not experienced this. No. But I mean, I could say 50,000, you know, bit by bit they have.
Fine.
So you give it 350.
I mean, the last census is 387.
Yeah, I can say, you know, somewhere between 30 and 50,000 people have experienced the beach over the last 50 years.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. People don't even...
But don't send more.
You could go to Harbor Island,
Let them see, oh, Lord.
And go crabbing. Right? People don't even know you can go crabbing in Harbor.
I mean, I don't know which year you're referring to as things evolve.
No, I talk about right now.
Okay.
I wouldn't, I mean, recommend it, but you could do it. The Long Island life. Go to Max's conch stand just outside Deadman's Key and have them make you their Parmesan crusted hogfish. Right? There's nothing in the universe.
Listen, I think I asked this question before in this podcast. Why are two of the best burgers of my life in Long Island within a week?
Because they could cook.
You know, in the words of our former prime minister, it is mind-boggling.
they could cook. They could cook in Long Island, buddy. Go to Rum Key and just walk around. It's very sad when you go from the airport to like a little settlement on the where the Rum Key Resort Marina was being built. I think it's called Abrams Bay. Or is that Meg One? I think that might be Meg One. But you drive through settlement, like two or three settlements that had just been abandoned because everybody came to Nassau.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Go. This country is... Have you ever been, for instance, personally, have you ever been to Inagua?
I have not.
Bahamians don't know how beautiful Inagua is.
All they need is a pea suit with a fine mesh so they don't get... That is only in
certain places, is my point.
What? I don't believe that.
You don't have to. Go see for yourself. Anyway, go and fish. Go and drop a line in the ocean and try pull a grouper out the ocean yourself. Pull a grunt, pull a jack, pull a Margaret fish, pull something, go and go fish. Go sit on the water and watch the sun come up. Go sail somewhere. Get on a boat and float out somewhere until you can't see land anywhere around you.
It sounds like you've moved into telling people to face their fears now.
No! I'm just saying, man. This country is so beautiful.
It is.
And it has so much to offer. And we are hunkered down so firmly.
That's true. But one thing I've said a lot in the last 5 years is that there are at least four Nassaus.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that has to do with socioeconomic position. Some of what you're describing, I think, can be gotten without a lot of money. Not all of it.
Oh, I don't know. I think I've been very careful not to say anything that I think it requires a lot of money to do.
I don't know. Boating is not cheap.
Yeah, but you could jump on a mail boat too.
And float out where they...
Yes, absolutely. Have you ever been on a mail boat?
Sir.
Exactly.
Sir.
Exactly. You acting like you don't know.
Sir.
If you've been on the excursion, you know exactly what I talk about.
Excursion? No, don't mix me up with...
With what?
With someone who want to be on an excursion.
You don't know what I talk about. There are, you could get on a boat at the dock and float down.
Yeah, but that's not the vibe.
No,
you were describing. Let's get it correct now.
May not be the vibe that I am explaining, but it is a way of experiencing the Bahamas from the water.
Mm.
If you can't afford to sail a boat, get on a mailboat. Do something. Go and experience your country in the way your country is meant, in my view, to be experienced. Eat some sea grapes. Eat some hog plum. Eat some cocoa plum.
Oh, we have to end. This will be my final statement. Only in the Bahamas can you be out on Airport Road and see a rather large and very new Mercedes SUV half in the road. And somebody out the driver's side picking coca block.
Absolutely. Because we ain't nothing in the world like coca block. Anyway, Loch Lomond 18, single malt scotch, on the list. Matthew, great conversation as usual. It was a wonderful conversation, my friend. Thank you.
Good to see you. Listener, have a wonderful day.
Yeah.
Ciao.
That's that obvious.
Check it out.